Chapter 20. Underlying Conditions. Just before the 2020 holidays, Colorado State University asked me to join a virtual discussion with fellow alumni who were on the political front lines. I had been in D.C. just 8 months before COVID took over my attention, so I was as much on the political front lines as Juanita Ramos. I accepted nonetheless, because I caused that school many headaches in my time there. The discussion was fine. Eugene Daniels, a Politico reporter and MSNBC commentator, stole the show, as we attempted to distill what we'd observed in 2020, which were varying vantages of the same horror. Nearing the hour-and-a-half mark, the mediator, hoping to end on a positive note, asked what we might do to encourage civil dialogue and disagreement in this age of division. One by one, the others offered optimism that we might find a way to speak to one another in good faith and in recognition of our common interests. I wish I could have added to the chorus. But I was the party pooper. The week before, I had wandered through a massive and raucous crowd that formed outside Walter Reed National Military Medical Center, where President Trump received treatment for COVID-19, benefiting from expensive therapeutics that were not afforded to hundreds of thousands of Americans who had been infected before him. Few in the crowd wore masks. Of the dozen or so I spoke with, none believed the president could have saved us the suspense by wearing a mask. Several trashed science, others trashed my profession. Some said COVID was a hoax. It was not altogether unexpected. I was drawn there because, when Trump left the White House for the hospital, he looked as we had never seen him. It was the look of someone who believed he could die, someone who understood the reality he willfully denied at the peril of his own countrymen and women. His bluster was at bay, if for a day, because the only thing he cared about more than his image was his corporeal ability to control it. I thought maybe some of his supporters had seen it too, and perhaps concluded they should do what they could to stop the spread. I saw the opposite. When the moderator finally came to me for thoughts on how we might improve our national discourse, I shared what was weighing on me and answered, "I have no idea. We've really lost something. I wish I were wrong." It was an unforgettable year in the worst way. To hasten its demise, I took a road trip just after Christmas to Vermont to ski icy slopes, eat cheese, and ring in the new year with drunk friends. "Fuck 2020," we declared with justification and feigned optimism. There wasn't enough booze in Burlington to rid our memories of that shit show, but we gave it our best. The first vaccines were on their way, so there was reason to blow off some steam to entertain hope. I happened to return to D.C. just after noon on Wednesday, January 6th. The news alerts hit like successive body blows. I looked to Twitter, then CNN. Congress was besieged by a mob waving Trump flags. Police were being overpowered, beaten, one with a pole draping an American flag. The rioters had breached the building. Congress was in lockdown. Journalists, interns, lawmakers, and custodial staff were inside. Shots had been fired. They had come to disrupt the perfunctory validation of Joe Biden's legitimate electoral win and to terrorize those adhering to the Constitution and a peaceful transition of power. A vast majority were white and male, an average age of 40. Some came with weapons. Some donned insignia of white supremacist hate groups and far-right militias like the Proud Boys and Three Percenters. Some wore funny hats and war paint. But most had no obvious ties to such groups. They were CEOs, salon owners, lawyers, doctors, and accountants. Of those that would be arrested for their part in the political violence, 1 in 5 served in the U.S. military. Whatever the demographics, January 6th was the worst of us. thousands of people gathered without wearing masks, risking the health and lives of everyone they hold dear, at the behest of an immunized, departing president who watched the violence on television. Confederate flags, a literal symbol of treason against the United States, flapped alongside the U.S. flag. Cops were beaten relentlessly by a crowd that included off-duty law enforcement officers and several flapping thin blue line pro-police flags. Military veterans who had once pledged their lives to protect American democracy were caught on video defiling it. The display of ideological confusion and rejection of even self-serving rationality revealed what January 6th really was. Obstinacy and hatred, masquerading as individual liberty and patriotism. In high definition, we saw that America was sickened by far more than a coronavirus. Many who perpetuated the Stop the Steal movement, alleging the 2020 election had been stolen from Trump, were also prominent beneficiaries of the anti-vaxxer movement. Del Bigtree, Alex Jones, and married couple Ty and Charlene Bollinger helped organize rallies that day, stirring together two pernicious lies. As messy as it was, the images of that day efficiently synthesized our current state of discourse. The consequences of demagoguery, politically useful lies, and willful ignorance were laid bare. All it took to inspire a mob to storm the capital of the most powerful nation in the world was Trump doing what he does. Deflection. Blindly and without evidence, he simply claimed the election had been stolen. His sycophants, his favorite cable news channel, and his party contributed to the doubt. The message amplified through an existing ecosphere of people and institutions who profit financially and politically from misinformation. A lie so provably false could not spark such a reaction alone. No, it metastasized in an ever-growing morass of conspiracy theories, innuendos, and outright lies that serve the few who've monetized it at the expense of those who fall for it. Ideas spun from this echo chamber can neither be logically explained nor rationally debated. But adherents believe them still and with fervor. In the end, a mind saturated with incoherent outrage, false narratives, and indefensible ideas knows no language but violence. And Trump had beckoned them to speak their minds. It was a vulgar display of our nation's underlying conditions. The celebration of overconfident ignorance, the denigration of expertise and science, systemic and blatant racism, the failure to heed warnings, the unwillingness to adapt to modest inconveniences, the inability to listen in good faith, the refusal to place strangers' lives above our own pride. All are symptoms of a pernicious cultural disease. I do not know the remedy, but if I had to guess a prognosis, I'd bet the violence will continue. Violence is not always physical. We kill with brutality and action, but also with passivity and inaction. The violence of willful ignorance didn't destroy democracy that day. But it would kill us slowly in the months to come, as millions of Americans rejected COVID-19 vaccines.